All right, well, welcome to the Statesman Journal's Explore Oregon podcast. I'm your host, Zachary Ness, and in each episode, we highlight Oregon's most beautiful and interesting places. In today's show, we're revisiting one of Oregon's most unique and glorious long-distance backpacking routes. Yes, we're talking about the Oregon Desert Trail, which is a great place to visit in the springtime and a great place to experience the new dark sky sanctuary we talked about in the last episode. Before we get rolling, I want to highlight the sponsors of this podcast that make it possible for us to hire and pay our outdoor journalism interns every spring, summer, and fall. Our first sponsor is the American Forest Resource Council, supporting responsible forestry on public lands throughout the Pacific Northwest. Learn more at amforest.org. We're also supported by Visit Tillamook Coast, a land of ocean and forest just an hour from the Willamette Valley that this spring will offer special volunteer vacations designed for visitors to spend a day doing a stewardship project and another headed out on a Tillamook Coast adventure. We'll have more details on this a little bit later in the show. Finally, we're brought to you by the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department that reminds visitors to leave no trace and buy local firewood when camping at state parks to limit the spread of invasive insects. All right, let's head out to the Oregon Desert Trail. But first, here's some guitar music to get us rolling. All right, welcome to the podcast. And in today's episode, we are going to repost an episode about the Oregon Desert Trail, a combination of roads, trails, and cross-country terrain that stretches 750 miles from Lake Owyhee State Park to just outside of Bend. I thought it was the perfect time to repost this episode, since spring is really the time to hike either the entire thing, if you're really a go-getter, or just hike a segment of the Oregon Desert Trail. The desert sunshine feels really good this time of year while the Willamette Valley is still so soggy. Other reasons to go out there now is that the trail travels through a lot of the newly established Oregon Outback Dark Sky Sanctuary. It also travels through the Owyhee Canyonlands, which conservation groups are currently pushing to be established as a national monument. But really, a good reason to go out there is just because it travels through stunning country, through fault block canyons, through, you know, desert rivers. It just touches on amazing places that a lot of people in Oregon don't always see. In this podcast, you'll be hearing from myself and Renee Patrick, coordinator of the trail for the Oregon Natural Desert Association. Since we recorded this back in 2019, the Desert Trail has become increasingly popular. It's gotten attention from some of the biggest names in long-distance hiking, and thousands of people have now explored it, whether by going the entire way or, more commonly, hiking segments of it. So if you're looking for a major adventure or just a quick weekend getaway, the Oregon Desert Trail has a lot of what you might be interested in. So let's jump into it. Hi, Renee. Thanks for taking some time.
Hi, Zach. Great to be here.
All right. So let's start off with this. What is the Oregon Desert Trail? If you're going to describe it to somebody from the Willamette Valley who hadn't heard of it, how would you describe it?
Yes. The Oregon Desert Trail is a 750-mile long trail that's not a trail.
Yeah.
I can explain a little bit more about that later, but essentially it helps introduce hikers, bikers, horseback riders to Eastern Oregon. It's often a landscape even a lot of Western Oregonians haven't visited or know about. So through this route, we're trying to engage people with the eastern side of the mountains.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting way of describing it because, you know, people think of Oregon, it's lush, it's green. But like the vast majority of the state is desert.
Correct, yeah. And it's really a place you have to get out often on foot to see and truly appreciate. When you're driving 60, 70 miles an hour down Highway 20, you really can't take in all there is out there. So we're trying to demystify it a little bit.
Okay, so give me some sort of nuts and bolts. So where does it start, where does it end, and how many miles are we talking about?
Sure, so the western terminus is just 20 miles east of Bend in the Badlands Wilderness. And then it does, I like to call it Big W, throughout southeastern Oregon, almost touching the California border by Lakeview, going up over Abert Rim, over to Heart Mountain Refuge, to the Steens, then down again to near Denio, Nevada, up again into the Trout Creek in Oregon Canyon Mountains, and down again to McDermott, Nevada, and then up the last 200 miles in the Owyhee Canyonlands. So the eastern terminus is at Lake Owyhee State Park, not too far from the Idaho border in Boise.
Gotcha. And so I have to think, you know, when you have that sort of like circuitous sort of route, it was designed that way. Like you guys picked it to like emphasize all the best stuff out there. Is that kind of how it came together?
Exactly. It was not only the most interesting features across the high desert, but also areas Anna's been working in. For example, it goes through Steens Mountain Wilderness, which was designated as wilderness in 2000, an effort that Anna was very involved in. In fact, where it, the Western Terminus and the Badlands Wilderness, that is celebrating 10 years of wilderness designation this year. So it's a way to sort of highlight these places and the work we do and the work we hope to do in other areas across the high desert.
Very cool. And talk a little bit more about how it's a route, because, you know, some people hear trail and they think, you know, Pacific Crest Trail, Appalachian Trail. So how is this different from that?
Yeah, well, I call it a virtual route, meaning you will find no signage that says Oregon Desert Trail out there, and often there is no trail. So when Onda went about trying to decide where this route would, trail route, however you call it, would go, they looked at the landscape, what's the existing infrastructure. So we actually found two national recreation trails, the Fremont National Recreation Trail and the Desert Trail. And so they connected into those. There happens to be trail in the Badlands Wilderness. And then there are a huge network of dirt roads that cross the high desert. So looking at those two-track dirt roads as a hiking path, and then connecting those aspects with some cross-country travel. And when I say cross-country, it's often these wide open sagebrush sea type landscapes where you can see a very clear destination or a high point that you walk towards. Or for example, along the edge of Abert Rim, which is a 2,500 foot Fault Black Mountain, you're walking the edge of that for about 10 miles. And that's considered cross-country.
Sure, and so it's a combination of, so it sounds like roads, there's some trail, and then there's cross-country. Those are the three primary things that comprise the route?
Yep, and I like to think it's paced out pretty well. Like you might do 10 miles on a dirt road and then have 5 miles cross-country and then a little bit of trail. So it gives you a lot of variety as you're moving throughout the landscape. And with that, there's different challenges that come from weaving in and out of sagebrush or walking on a dirt road, which some people may think is monotonous, but hey, it goes a lot faster on a bike. So maybe you want to bike that dirt road.
Okay, gotcha. So from a wide angle view, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the segments later. What's cool about the trail and where the travel's like? Why hike this route? What's cool about it?
Well, as a thru hiker myself, I've hiked a lot of the long trails in the country, and I think what's hard to find on trails like the Pacific Crest Trail is solitude, and that's something the Oregon Desert Trail has in abundance. Most hikers say they see more pronghorn than humans, and that is a positive thing. Like if that's the experience you're interested in, there's a lot of that available. There are also night skies, unlike what you can see from, you know, the western side of the state. We have the largest block of sky without light pollution, so you can see the stars. There are hot springs. We go by a number of hot springs. There's geological wonders. Some of the oldest human history in the whole country is in eastern Oregon. So there's a variety of things to interest you as you're hiking along the way.
Very cool. So let's step back a little bit. How did it become a reality? How old is it? And so take me through like where the idea came from and when it became, I guess, a thing, for lack of a better term.
Sure. So our Former executive director Brent Fenty had this idea in 2010. He actually is also a Pacific Crest Trail thru-hiker, so I think that helped inform his idea a little bit. But he thought, what if we could connect the areas we've been working in with a trail or a path? And so then over the next 3 years, my predecessor, Jeremy Fox, was hired to figure out where this would go. Where is it? Where is the route? Where would the water be? How would people travel in this landscape? And then hundreds and hundreds of hours of volunteer time went out into hiking it, putting together a guidebook and a map set. So we're actually celebrating 5 years this spring. The materials were first released to the public in 2014. So in just 5 years, we've grown the materials quite a bit. I came in the winter of 2015 and reflected on all the past hiking experience that I have, probably about 10,000 miles on other trails, and put together a bunch of new resources, all these things to help people be successful, to help find water, to help with navigation.
You know, it's unique because, you know, usually when you think of the Pacific Crest Trail, they're all very intentional. But it's interesting that you guys came up with this idea and were like, you know, what's the best way to connect people to the high desert? Build a trail through there. And it's a novel way of doing it.
So I went and hiked the whole thing and pack rafted part of it in 2016. And the option to have this immersive desert experience where you're spending, I spent over 6 weeks by myself hiking through this landscape. And because there's often no trail or no signs, you have to be incredibly aware and pay attention to your surroundings and the next water source. But that level of attention really gets you deeper in touch with what's happening around you. And you have developed this like really deep connection to the landscape because it is so challenging, because you have to be, you know, aware all the time. And I think that is, you know, a really incredible, unique aspect of a route like this, is you will know Eastern Oregon after you hike this on a much deeper level.
Because you kind of have to, right? Because you're navigating from, you know, point to point. So you have to know, okay, that's that landmark over there, that's where I find water, you know, instead of just being on a trail and you don't have to pay attention to the surroundings as much.
Correct. And I, you know, all the other trail experiences I had, I was never really aware of what forest I was in, what wilderness area I was in. But that's something I tried to infuse in the materials. So when you're hiking through Steens Mountain Wilderness, we try to explain what is unique about this place. Why does it have the protection it does? What, you know, what animals and plants are found here? But you also get a real sense of the geology of it, of the basin and range topography. You're literally going between mountain range, and then you go to a flat desert like the Alvord Playa, and then you walk to the next mountain range. And it's a really unique way to see it, but through your feet.
It feels like more than even the Pacific Crest Trail or those long distance ones, there's things that you need to do in planning for this kind of trip. So what are the big ones? I'm thinking water, since we're dealing with the desert, but there's got to be a lot else. So what would be like the three things you really have to study up on before undertaking, like if you wanted to do the whole route?
Sure. Well, funny you mentioned three things. Just this winter, I did a big revision of all the materials, and included in that was a skills rating of the challenges that people will encounter along the route. So now for each of our sections, we have 25 sections that make up the entire 750 miles. You have a rating on water availability, you have a rating on the navigation, and you have a rating on the terrain. So those are three aspects that you may have a beautiful section of trail like in the Badlands Wilderness, but no water. So that's an easy rating on the navigation, but a very challenging rating on the water availability. And then there are also other materials I developed. Probably the most important one is the data book water sheet. So this is a document that lists all the waypoints, the distances between waypoints. This all matches our maps and our guidebook. But then where there is water on the route, it's rated between reliable, questionable, and unreliable.
So in each segment, there's a water rating saying that water is difficult to find or easy to find. there's a navigation rating, and was there a third one?
Yeah, so the third one is terrain, because even within the term cross-country, we have a vast variety of conditions. So cross-country might mean, like I mentioned before, walking on the edge of Abert Rim. It's a very clear cliff, you know where to go and where not to go. But then cross-country also is in West Little Owyhee Canyon, which is really a slot canyon, which no matter what time of year you're in there, you're scrambling and you're swimming in deep pools. So that those two cross-country sections are very different in their challenges, and one is much easier than the other.
Gotcha. Makes perfect sense. So I wanted to ask you about this because Oregon Field Guide did an episode and I saw some video of Sage watching with an umbrella over her head. Is that par for the course? Would you recommend bringing an umbrella?
That is probably the number one gear recommendation I make. Yes. A sun umbrella, there are sections with absolutely no trees. And so if you happen to be out there, say in middle of June, it could be really, really intense with the sun. And turns out these umbrellas work great in the rain too. So it's actually, the Oregon desert is a high desert. And so it's colder more months out of the year than it is hot. And you can get rainstorms or snowstorms any time of year. A fun thing that I like to do with my umbrella is I've created bug netting that covers the umbrella and has elastic at the waist. So when I'm in a very buggy area at the southern end of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, if you're there in June, it is mosquito heaven or hell. And so I can walk in my mosquito netting bubble over my umbrella and be totally, pest free.
Do you ever come across people that look at you and see you with your umbrella and you're nutting and they're just like, wow, what's that? Are they, maybe they're jealous though.
Yeah. It depends. I think when I hiked the trail in 2016, even just the sight of a long distance backpacker was very strange. Mm-hmm. Like Eastern Oregon is not a traditional backpacking type of area. But all those strange looks and that curiosity was actually really exciting because people would ask questions, they would stop and have a million sort of questions for you. They would offer water and fruit, and it ended up that weirdo walking across the desert provoked a lot of cool conversations.
Yeah, for sure. So is there an ideal season or a season that you recommend for folks?
Spring and fall are the best times. Summer can be extremely hot out along the route. Winter, on high snow years, you could maybe ski tour the whole thing. We've had someone snowshoe in the real big winter a couple years ago, snowshoe the first 200 miles. But I say spring and fall, and I think fall even has a slightly larger weather window. Sometimes we won't get snow or significant snow until quite late December. So your window could be larger in the fall.
I'm Andy Geisler. I'm a forester at the American Forest Resource Council, and we're proud to sponsor the Explore Oregon podcast. Like you, I love the outdoors. On many days, the forest is my office. I work on the ground with public lands agencies on good forest management projects. Forest management helps achieve important conservation goals while providing sustainable timber. Science-based forestry helps improve wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, clean air, and water. And it's essential to providing renewable, climate-friendly wood products. Learn more about us at amforest.org.
This message is brought to you by Visit Tillamook Coast. The Tillamook Coast Visitors Association is excited to bring back their Volunteer Adventures program for 2024 that will welcome groups from inside or outside Tillamook County to lend a hand in stewardship programs while also having a good time. One example of an itinerary would be spending one day clearing invasive brush or working on a hiking trail. The next would include something like a guided hike or kayak trip. The type of activity that highlights the Tillamook area and shows why doing stewardship projects is so important. All meals, lodging, and activities are included. The program is designed to offer participants the opportunity to give back to our popular area while also learning the vital role stewardship plays in preserving our natural places. If you want more information or to sign up early, search for Tillamook Coast Volunteer Adventures or email Dan Hagg at dan@tillamookcoast.com. Once again, that email is dan@tillamookcoast.com. Our third and final sponsor is the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department that invites Oregonians to explore parks this fall and winter to experience the beauty of those seasons. If you're camping, remember to get firewood from sources local to your destination to avoid bringing invasive insects, such as the devastating emerald ash borer, into parks. This will help preserve the health of Oregon's forests for seasons to come. Learn more about protecting Oregon's ash trees at stateparks.oregon.gov.
Gotcha. So you earlier talked about the segments. So how many total segments do you have? And is that how a lot of people end up doing it? Is just doing segments of it?
Yeah, so we have 25 sections, and each section ranges between about 20 and 40 miles. And so, yes, section hiking or hiking differently throughout the route is getting to be a more popular way. That's actually how I hiked it, and I think it allows for choosing the segment in the best season. So, for example, now hiking in near Bend, in the spring is fantastic, but you get to Steens Mountain, almost 10,000 feet, and you're still dealing with considerable snow. And so a good reason to section hike is pick your direction, pick your season, and just knock it off one little bit at a time. I also want to mention the multi-sport aspect of it. So there are three rivers you could paddle. Like when I was out, I paddled the Owyhee 140 miles as a water alternate. There are places, all those dirt roads you could bike. There is a lot of equestrian use in some areas of the trail, especially the Steens. And then skiing, you know, we have a lot of people like to ski up the Steens or explore other areas. So really, you don't even have to just go on foot or in the same season. We're really trying to open it up to other forms of quiet recreation, other times of the year. And you also have a reason to go back. Mm-hmm. You may have hiked Steens, but you've never skied Steens, or you've not paddled the Donner and Blitzen River. So there's a reason to visit the high desert more than once.
So is there, you know, for lack of a better term, and you probably like all of them equally, but, you know, if somebody wants to get out there and see, like, oh, I really want, you know, Canyonlands and an easier trail, do you have it in favorites or, you know, sections you recommend to people who, you know, want to see a certain type of train?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it depends on your skill level and what kind of experience you're looking at. In addition to the skills rating, we developed a skills progression this year. So I like to suggest for hikers who like trail, are not quite comfortable with cross-country travel, to start in the Fremont Forest. So sections 7 and 8 in our route tie into about 60 miles of lovely single track trail, great views, water, shade, and that's a fantastic place to spend a week out and get a taste. And then we have a bunch of suggestions for how to ramp up your skills and maybe try something a little harder. I think the Owyhee, just for its remoteness and the Slot Canyon aspect, and actually a lot of the route travels on the rim, so you're 1,000 feet above the river below, and then water can be an issue and accessing, going down to the river and accessing the water, but it's quite stunning. I would say the end section, section 25, that starts in Leslie Gulch, goes near the Honeycombs area and up and over to Lake Owyhee State Park, is absolutely fabulous as well.
So let's see here. What would you say are the, and maybe you already touched on it, but what would be kind of the easiest, most user-friendly segments?
So the segments with trail, I would start with the Badlands Wilderness is a great spot, really close to Bend. The Steens Mountain Wilderness, so the route goes up Big Indian Gorge, which is about 8 miles of fantastic trail in a glaciated gorge. Steens is a great option for just wanting to taste what the route is like, what the desert is like, but be on a trail.
Okay, so those are two easier options. What are some more challenging? You know, if you got people who really want to push themselves, whether it's navigation or, you know, having to make certain miles to get to a water source, what are the more challenging sections?
Yeah, the water section actually between Bend and Paisley is the driest section. That's 160 miles. And so we have some suggestions for water caching. So we've worked with the BLM on identifying a couple areas that people, hikers, might like to cache water. We actually have a few trail supporters in Summer Lake who are helping hikers with water as well. So that's a big challenge in that section is I hiked that section in the fall and was carrying about 3 gallons of water, which is a lot on your back. And then again, like I mentioned, the West Little Owyhee and the Slot Canyon aspect, that can be really challenging. Even in the fall, very low water, there will be pools of water you'll have to swim through. And then bushwhacking. So I've been able to reroute a few sections of the trail that go through some heavy, heavy brush, but actually descending from Steens Mountains down off of Wild Horse Lake is one of the most frustrating sections. We've actually tied into the Desert Trail route, which was the predecessor designated as a National Recreation Trail in 92, but it's actually still a route. Very, very thick sagebrush that you're pushing through. But then when you get to that road, dirt road on the other side, you are very grateful for a road walk.
And for those who don't know, I mean, I've hiked through sagebrush and it is an experience kind of unlike anything else. Could you describe that a little bit?
It can be very abrasive. So I actually like to hike in a skirt and I wear tall gaiters, snow gaiters, to help protect my legs. I have actually had sagebrush draw blood, like when you're pushing through and they're very sharp. It can be very unpleasant. And another gear tip, a sun umbrella and tall gaiters when you are bushwhacking in sagebrush or tall grasses.
Do you have a favorite stretch trail?
I would say the biggest surprise for me was hiking on Diablo Rim, which is on the east side of Summer Lake. So Winter Rim is stunning if you know the Summer Lake area. But on the other side, there is a 1,000-foot-long fault that I hadn't really internalized or thought about, and I got up there and saw what I thought was a huge herd of pronghorn, but they just ran off the edge of this 1,000-foot cliff, and I thought, what? And I peek over the edge and realize it's a herd of bighorn sheep, and it was just incredible. And you look east and you can't see any traces of humans, and it's almost like you can see the curvature of the earth, and that view is just stunning.
So anything else you think folks should know about the Oregon Desert Trail, either if they're planning for it or just to know that it's out there? I mean, how are you getting more people who are out there hiking it?
Yeah, I'd say it's a slow, steady growth. We're working closely with our land management agencies with this idea of a route, and that's not a trail. And it's kind of a newer idea. And so I think a lot of it is setting realistic expectations. Like, just know the challenges when you go out there. Spend some time on our website. We have a ton of resources. There are actually a lot of hikers who have made videos or written blogs about their hikes, and so that's a great way to understand what someone else experienced out there. And I'll give one plug for a really hilarious video series. Christoph Tuscher ran the Oregon Desert Trail in 2016. He completed it in 17 days and 15 hours, but I think he just has a crazy funny sense of humor and put together these silly videos that are just give you a good picture of the pain but also the beauty and reward of experiencing the high desert.
All All right, well, that's about all the time we have left in today's show. If you like what you've heard, check out our catalog of more than 60 episodes featuring Oregon's most beautiful and interesting places at statesmanjournal.com/explore, along with Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We'd once again like to thank our sponsors, beginning with the American Forest Resources Council. AFRC supports responsible forestry on public lands throughout the Pacific Northwest for our environment, for our economy, and for the future. Learn more at amforests.org. We'd also like to thank Visit Tillamook Coast. If you want to plan a trip out there, you can check out their outdoor recreation map that shows all the places to hike, swim, boat, and camp. You can find that map at tillamookcoast.com/recreation-map. Once again, that's tillamookcoast.com/recreation-map. And thanks to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, which stresses the importance of recreating responsibly and leaving no trace in Oregon's outdoors. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for the next edition of the Explore Oregon podcast.